News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for January 5th, 2016, and episode number 247, and this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. I didn't get to see anybody or talk to anybody since the new year, so this is the first show of the year. And we went out with a bang last year after my show. I came on with Frank Lee and Paranormalities and Ponderings, and had my little after party with Frank and Dave Considine. It was a great show. If you missed it, you missed it. You can find the an archive out there somewhere, but it was a great time. And I think we stayed up pretty late on that show. Nonetheless, it was a great time. What's coming up tonight? Well, it's a new year, new stories, but it's the same old kind of stuff here. But this week's news includes: a Montana man captures UFOs in honor of Roswell. Santiago, Chile, UFO video solved. 800-year-old cell phone went right to voicemail. And ball lightning or a wool hat. What does that mean? Well, you'll find out. Plus, the book of the week, Conferences and Conventions, makes a return here. We haven't talked about those in a while. And a whole lot more coming up tonight here on the Paranormal News Insider. And want to welcome everybody to the chat room. Anybody who's in there listening live in the chat room, you're going to see a lot of stuff tonight, a lot of links, some pictures, some stuff based on my research. So if you're not in the live chat room and you're listening in, you're gonna miss out here, because it's going to be some good stuff here tonight. A lot of links, and tune in for that. You know, I mentioned conferences and conventions. Actually, it's weird to see a conference or convention happen in the middle of the week, but that's what's happening right now. Right now is the International Cryptozoology Museum Conference down in St. Augustine, Florida. They're in day two of three, and it wraps up tomorrow afternoon. It's a half day, I believe, so you missed that. It's the first big conference of the year, and it's a pretty major one for cryptozoology and the International Cryptozoology Museum. And if you listen to the show the last couple of weeks, you know that I've been talking about the International Cryptozoology Museum and the fact that they need some help financially with their move. They're moving to a new, larger area, going to be a little closer to the water. Right now they're in Portland, Maine, but they're kind of in the middle of the city there. Now they're going to go to a nicer, larger area with a lot more parking. And it's going to be a lot more displays, a lot more things to see down there at the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine. And I highly recommend getting out there and seeing it. Maybe not right now. It's a little snowy out there. It's looking a lot like Christmas where I'm at here in Northeast Ohio. But that's good. We need a little snow. We need the weather change. And the cold weather will bring out the paranormal stories. It will. You'll find that out. And I also want to welcome people listening in from ParanormalForum.net. You guys are big fans of the show, and they're doing a kind of a live simulcast chat as they're listening to the show and kind of disseminating what I'm talking about and talking about what's going on. So it's kind of weird to have two chat rooms honoring the show at the same time, but I welcome them and hope they get a lot of great information tonight. Again, that's ParanormalForum.net. And I'll tell you, message boards – I know I've said this before, but message boards are a dying thing, and it's sad to see, because that's kind of one of the ways where I started out as a researcher and investigator, was learning from a lot of people that I knew on message boards and just getting that information, back and forth kind of conversation. And unfortunately, Facebook, even MySpace before that, is kind of taken away from that almost instant access to somebody else's information. And Message boards are fantastic, and I wish they would not die, die their slow death. And I've been a part of many of them, but this one is highly active. There's a lot of great people on there sharing a lot of information, and they're willing to listen to other people's opinions, and they welcome it. So, if you're interested in learning from other people, as well as getting a lot of information, they share a lot of the stories that I talk about tonight, and I share a lot of information that I get with them, a lot of my research and things that's going on for the show. And you can, again, that's paranormalforum.net. So get out there and check it out. Now, one of the stories that I have talked about that popped up on paranormalforum.net was the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015, which, yes, you heard that live, ramped up last week. But I wrote a blog, which was published automatically on Wednesday, the day after I revealed the number two and number one stories live here on WCJV. So the blog went over pretty well. It was put on anomalous.com, I think on, well, it's 2 days ago now. It was on the 3rd. A little bit of a delay there, but it was fantastic. Tons of people have viewed this story, and I can share a little bit of numbers about this. The blog post for the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015 is now the seventh most popular story out of my 78 blog posts that I've put on the blog since January of 2009. Granted, 41 of those blog posts were for an app I used to use in conjunction with the blog to let people know that new episodes were live on the air or live through that feed. But 37 stories, and this one here is number seven and climbing right now. So awesome to be on the Anomalist. It's a big way to get your name and your information out there very quickly. It's probably the most popular paranormal news outlet on the internet. So check out the blog if you haven't seen it, if you haven't read it. It's essentially what you heard. There's a little bit more information that I added doing some research writing that report up. So check it out. So what's in the news this week? This week is, again, it's gotten a little cold. People are, I think, already getting cabin fever. I don't know why. It's been warm everywhere, but people are getting a little angsty out there in internet land. And there's some really interesting stories. Unfortunately, not a whole lot of true paranormal stuff, but a lot of wacky stuff that we'll talk about. And there's one story that I kind of postponed for a little while because we've been talking about, again, the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015 for the last 5 weeks. And it's kind of bumped a little bit of that time I've had to talk about stuff. But we'll move on here and talk about this next story. This story, I don't remember when this happened. It was a couple of weeks ago. And it involves Dr. Richard O'Connor from Clancy, Montana. Kind of crazy story here. This guy set up two cameras about 2 years ago on his back deck at his home, pointed toward the sky with the hopes of capturing a UFO, but not physically capturing it, but capturing it on his cameras. Now, he took over 280,000 photographs. That's a lot that were taken due to motion sensors that would set off the camera. That's why he had so many of them, not because he had that many UFOs. But he did finally get what he was hoping for. And this happened on November 4th of last year. At around noon, he obtained a series of photographs of a strange lighted object on camera. Now, the cameras are mounted 30 feet above the ground and are triggered by motion sensors that will take 20 photos at one-second intervals. O'Connor created a report to NUFORC, which is the National UFO Reporting Center, about his photographs. Peter Davenport, the head of NUFORC, then forwarded the photographs to photographic experts, one of which stated, quote, "Bottom line, I think the images are real," but remain a mystery. I suspect the lights in the first and last photos are sun reflections off of something rather than any propulsion system, unquote. The analyst also added, quote, thus I conclude it is a puzzle to solve rather than a fake, unquote. Well, that's all well and good, but another photo analyst created his own thought of the photographs by saying, no quote needed here, that they were 100% fake. Well, O'Connor did not take this analysis very well and was outraged with Davenport and has now decided to get someone else to look at his photographs. I guess it's just a case of I'm taking my toys somewhere else because you're not playing the way I want you to play. O'Connor claims he has no knowledge of how to manipulate photographs and has also offered to take a polygraph. Okay. I don't know anybody in this day and age that doesn't know how to alter any kind of photograph or imagery, and especially somebody who could rig cameras up to their back deck and sift through thousands of photographs. But anyway, could these be the real deal? Well, actually, until what is in the photographs is truly determined, these are the real thing. These are UFOs. That's the whole definition, unidentified flying objects. You don't know what they are. So he's gotten his goal. However, this does not imply that these are alien craft, just that what we are seeing here does not have any solid explanation as of yet. Why is O'Connor obsessed with UFOs? It's probably the big question here. Why is he doing all this? And that's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. Sticking your neck out there to professionals. You know, you're messing with fire here. So why? Why is he doing this? Well, from the article and other information I was able to find, I see no reason why he has taken such a personal quest to validate UFOs other than one particular reason. O'Connor knew a man named Jesse Marcel Jr. Well, if that name doesn't ring a bell, Jesse Marcel Jr. died in April of 2013, but seemed to have an effect on O'Connor as a friend. So who was Jesse Marcel Jr.? Well, I think the more important question is who his father was. Jesse Marcel Sr. was a major at the Roswell Army Airfield in Roswell, New Mexico. He was purportedly not only a witness to the effects of the Roswell UFO crash in July of 1947, but has also reportedly brought home pieces of the wreckage where his son, Marcel Jr., then aged 10, was awoken in the middle of the night to view the pieces. The following day, however, Marcel Sr. was present at a press conference where Brigadier General Roger Ramey announced that the purported wreckage that even he himself had inspected was nothing more than a weather balloon. The incident really faded away until 1978, when Stanton Friedman met Marcel and the legend of the Roswell crash was revived to its current status. Jesse Marcel died in 1986 while still adding more information to his purported one night with the UFO. Since then, Marcel Jr. has been a regular on the convention scene and has carried on the belief of Roswell from his father's stories, despite no actual evidence to support the claims. While Marcel Jr.'s story is a little shaky, O'Connor's is built on that of Marcel Jr.'s, which, again, was built on his father's. So where does that bring us? Closer to the truth, or tightly wound within a string of lies and deception in order to bring attention? Well, if you haven't seen the pictures, I'm going to post a little linky-dinky here in the chat room, and you can check some of those out. They're not really in any particular order or anything, but it kind of gives you a glimpse of what he saw and what the analysts have seen. And speaking of analysts, I was thinking about this. 280,000 photographs taken over 2 years. That's incredible. So breaking down these numbers, I don't know exactly how long he put up what time he put up the cameras between then and when he took them down, or when he didn't take them down, but when he found these photographs on November 4th. Well, let's just say for giggles, it's 365 days for each year. So 280,000 photographs over 2 years would mean around 380 photographs a day had to be analyzed. So around 400 photographs a day, not just glanced at or looked at, but analyzed. Looked at really close to make sure there's nothing in there. And granted, some of these are groups. Again, 20 pictures for each motion sensor. So you're going to see trees moving or birds or something in these pictures. But you never know. So regardless, if you're doing all this, you might as well look at these pretty close. 400 pictures a day. That's crazy. I mean, I love my research, but come on, that's a little extreme. In 2012, O'Connor opened a library on his property in honor of Jesse Marcel. The library is also home to the Crop Circles Research Foundation, Incorporated. And, you know, I long to be remembered for my work in the paranormal, but building a library, it's kind of something usually reserved for presidents. I don't know if I'll ever be that important. And as far as the photographs are concerned, many of the nighttime ones are nothing more than reflections of bugs. The other daylight ones may have logical explanations, but either way, one cannot conclude that these are alien craft and are just unexplainable. Which, again, that fits the definition, unexplained flying objects, unidentified, I should say, flying objects. So he kind of reached his goal, but it's just kind of creepy. I think he's just trying to insert his name as a researcher or investigator and try to become on the level of Jesse Marcel Jr. That's kind of what I'm hinting at here. I think he's just – he feels a little left out and he wants to do something of significance, which, you know, we all do. And we all try to do something in our lives, whether it's with the paranormal or anything else that makes us stand out as individuals. But riding the coattails of somebody else usually never turns out very well for anyone. So my recommendation to him is to continue to do your own work and not worry about what the work of somebody else is doing. But, you know, that's just kind of – I guess that's what he's caught into here. Maybe he'll discover something, or maybe he'll find something interesting over the course of the next couple of years if he continues to do this. But my goodness, I can't even imagine how many – hours a day you spend staring at a screen, analyzing pictures. And again, I love my research. I spend countless hours reading through stories, reading blogs, and reading newspaper articles here online, on my phone. Even at lunch, I'm on my phone looking at stories and trying to dig up some research on information, emailing somebody or calling somebody to dig up information to talk about here during the Paranormal News Insider. But man, 280,000 photographs in 2 years. That's dedication, I guess, for what little he's been able to return on that. And I want to let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I mentioned last week, after the Paranormal News Insider, had a little rest period there, and then I joined Frank Lee for the Paranormalities and Ponderings with Dave Considine as a guest, and we talked about 2015 and a lot of stories and a lot of information, and we were all over the place, which that's how Dave and I are anyway. But it was a good time, and it was a great show. But Frank's got another great show tonight, and it's coming up 45 minutes after I'm done here tonight if you're listening live. So be sure to listen in tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. And you know all the other times. I'm not good at figuring all that stuff out here on the fly. But Frank Lee is going to be talking with author, lecturer, and independent researcher Stephen Myers as he shares his findings related to ancient Egypt and the Great Pyramid. Again, tonight on Paranormalities and Ponderings on WCJV Digital Broadcasting. So back to the news here. Still talking about some UFO stuff. And it's kind of interesting. Videos seem to be the flavor of the day. A lot of weird videos coming out. And this one really piqued my interest. And it's it was the my most favorite story up until a couple of days ago with another story that I'll talk about a little later on. Here in the chat room, I just posted a YouTube video, and this is one of a pair of videos that recently surfaced of a number of UFOs observed over the skies of Santiago, Chile in late December. In the video, a number of craft can be seen with white lights moving slowly over the city. These videos have resulted with fear, panic, and much speculation within the UFO community, with many weighing in on what they think is happening. With UFO sightings, it's critical to have more than one video or photograph in order to determine the location of the objects, as well as gather additional clues. However, typically when more than one video are presented, a logical finding is usually not far behind. And these videos are no exception. But they're also quite common for this time of the year in Chile. And actually, I've come to expect them. I know that sounds weird to say, but I've come to expect to see these videos. Now, one internet blogger, I won't mention the name, has written up a story about these sightings, these UFO sightings in Santiago, and said that it's weird that 2 years in a row, these same craft have returned. These same UFOs are flying over the city. Well, if you'd done your homework, you would have known that this has been happening every year since 2003. A lot longer than 2 years, but it's not what you think. Every year in Santiago, there is a graduation ceremony at the Pilan Operations Aviation School of T-35 Pilan two-seater propeller-driven trainers. Yep, they're airplanes. They're little airplanes. And this event happens every year in December since 2003 and usually has UFO videos right after the parade online. Despite this being common knowledge for residents of Santiago, they still film this and think that they're UFOs, and UFO and paranormal sites continue to report them without many doing the research to find the source. Now, I went through my stories from the last couple of years. I actually didn't report on this last year, but a couple of years ago, I did do a quick blurb about it, saying the same thing I'm saying tonight, that these sightings have occurred year after year. And I mentioned that the Paranormal News Insider blog for the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015 was put on the Anomalist and was a very popular popular blog. But I've also done a blog for this story, and in this blog you'll find out a lot more information than what I've just talked about here in regards to links of to videos that you can find. And heck, you know what? One of the videos is of a parade, and it shows these airplanes flying by. I'm going to post that one in the chat room here on the WCJV Digital Broadcasting website, and you can watch this. This is these are the planes doing a flyby. They're in a triangle formation and flying by the crowd. And this is something, again, they do this every single year for graduation. And these are little aircraft, small aircraft. They're two-seaters, where the pilot and co-pilot, because they're trainers, they sit right behind each other. And again, it's a propeller-driven aircraft, so they're not very noisy. So granted, people may know about this, but when they see these things in the sky, you're not going to hear the typical sound that you're used to hearing with this. So you're not it's not as easily recognizable as what you would get for typical UFO sightings. And that's that for that story. I mean, it's just explainable, and it's cool to see it, but it's unfortunate that people that are in the paranormal would not do more research on that like I did. It didn't take that long, folks. I mean, come on. And you know, I mentioned social media. I try not to post too much stuff on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. But sometimes it's kind of annoying when you get inundated with with different things, links and all these things constantly from places. It's good because I do get a lot of stories from a lot of different sources, but I don't like to inundate people with too much on my feeds. But you can find me on Twitter, on Facebook, as well as Google Plus. Usually Paranews Insider, abbreviated a little bit there for all of these things. And my Facebook site, facebook.com/ParanewsInsider, is linked up to my Twitter account. So anything I post there on Facebook automatically gets recycled into Twitter. So you can check that out. The Google Plus thing, kind of ignore that a little bit too much, unfortunately. But it is a great, great resource out there for anybody who's involved in social media and haven't really checked it out. A lot of great and interesting things popping up on there all the time, and a lot less viral garbage than what gets circulated via Facebook, which, like I've mentioned before, I spend a lot of time dealing with all the stuff, the crazy stuff that pops up on Facebook. And speaking of which, brings us to another story here, a viral story. You probably read this one already. It was an interesting story when it came out. It seemed a little bit too good to be true, or should I say, too silly to be true, and kind of funny. And it actually got pretty viral. It's kind of the story that I wasn't going to talk about, but it's gained so much traction virally that I can't really ignore it. I got to mention it at least here tonight. So, making its rounds on the internet last week was that of a supposed 800-year-old cell phone found during a supposed excavation in Austria in early 2015. The object is rumored to have been deposited by an alien race and contained a Sumerian writing style. The cell phone-looking object is compared to a Nokia phone and is actually thought to have been a handheld communication device. Yeah. Despite all the speculation that people are creating about this, there is one small fact I found, again, by merely doing an image search of this object. The object was not found, but was created. Not in 2015, but back in 2012. The object in question appeared on a foreign Flickr account in January of 2012 with a similar backstory of being found in Austria. But the account describes being a person who replicates art objects or creates them using a fake history. Well, it's not enough to realize that there were no cell phone towers 800 years ago. But there was also no electricity or other ways to power the phones. But, why let facts get in the way of a good story, right? Now, this was a cool story. It was really interesting, but again, come on. A cell phone from that long ago, kind of crazy that people would believe these types of things, but people do believe these kind of things without the logic behind what would actually was really going on with this object. I mean, come on. So, anyway, videos. This next story here we're going to talk about is my favorite story of the year. Well, it's only the 5th January, but so far this is my favorite story. And I thought it was going to be the UFOs over Santiago, but this story here, oh yeah, this is it here. This is the coolest video that you're ever going to see this year. Hands down, I think this is going to be it. I don't think anything is going to trump this. What you're going to see here in the chat room live right now is great stuff. This is a strange video that popped up on YouTube on January 3rd showing a sky with a green and red aurora during a thunderstorm in the city of Canberra in southeastern Australia. In the 22-second video, we see something strange at the 13-second mark as a mysterious round white light slowly appears, then suddenly flashes twice before fading into a smoke ring. Yeah, check it out. It's really cool. Interestingly, the story has been picked up globally, and experts from around the world from meteorologists to physicists are stating that this is a legitimate video of ball lightning. Yeah. Despite many claims that this is some sort of portal to another galaxy or another dimension, a lot of paranormal shows are calling it this. You know, ball lightning was what I thought of as well, but there's another word that starts with B that I also thought of when viewing this video as well. These experts, meteorologists, physicists, and I forget, there's a whole list of people who have weighed in on this video already just in the course of a couple of days. It's kind of weird that they've all assigned this legitimate explanation, and they really haven't – I don't think they've really dug into this video, and they've really not questioned what they're seeing within this video. And it doesn't seem that too many of these people actually doubt the video itself. And for me, when I first saw it, I thought immediately, this is fake. This is not real. This is kind of a real scene here, but it's being overlaid with other stuff. And didn't really take it as legitimate. But when I saw that these people were talking about this, I thought, well, maybe there's something maybe there's something to this. This could be the greatest video of all time. Paranormal stuff found right here. You know, how perfect. Ball lightning is extremely rare, and for it to be photographed that closely, and this is going to change history. This video here is the images are going to be shown in textbooks all around the world. I mean, this is better than adding elements to the periodic table. I mean, this is great. This is groundbreaking science right here. Yeah, you can sense a little bit of sarcasm in my voice here, but the video itself, you know, after reading what these experts had to say, I really sat down and I really broke this video down, and I'm not one to go frame by frame normally on these things. It's either yes, it's real, or no, it's not. To me, there should be no in betweens, but this one kind of needed that. Since so many other people had weighed in on this video, I really wanted to break it down. And for me, I have a few concerns. First thing you always look for, obviously, after watching the video is who uploaded this video. Where did this video come from? Where is the source? Who's the first person to upload this video on the internet? With YouTube, it's pretty easy. There are ways to dig into this kind of stuff and look for dates and times of when stuff was uploaded. And this video was uploaded to YouTube by user Johnson Thompson, which no one had contacted other than through his YouTube account. And this is the first and only video by this person, which is both good and bad. It's good since this person has no precedent for uploading fraudulent videos or creating clickbait links, which, again, the other thing you look for is if the video in question has ads. If it has ads, somebody's making money every time somebody views it. But this one doesn't have ads. So that was another thing initially that made me think, well, you know, maybe there is some legitimacy to this this video. But the bad side is we don't really know who this person is. They don't even have a picture for their account. And this is their first video. And the account was created the same day the video was uploaded, which is strange. So, you know, you could go a lot of ways with this. This could be someone who has deceived us in the past and is just hiding under a disposable identity. Or it could just be somebody who doesn't have a Gmail account and is getting a YouTube account for the first time, which, again, is probably good news because maybe they haven't really created videos like this. And this is a pretty good video. If this is a hoax, they did a pretty decent job. And I say pretty decent because, for me, I see a lot of problems with it. I mean, the first obvious issue is with the video. Well, we don't know how long the person was filming the scene, but it's awfully convenient that this ball lightning happened in nearly center of the camera shot. I mean, wow, you're talking a one in a billion chance. First of all, to capture ball lightning on film, which is only a handful of times this has ever occurred, But to get probably the best example ever in the history of science, right dead center in the middle of your shot. Good job, Mr. Thompson. The second thing here is the green and red aurora. Now, this is Australia, so we would be seeing what's called the Southern Lights or the Aurora Australis. Now, one problem with this is the fact that this is overcast with a storm in the area of the video. These lights would only be seen with clear skies, but that creates a couple of other issues. In order to observe the Southern Lights from Canberra, there would have to be a pretty massive solar storm created by a maximum of 9 on the KP scale. Now, this KP scale essentially assigns numbers to the strength of the aurora, which allows the visitors the ability to know when they should be able to observe the aurora in their particular area. Now, I live in Northeast Ohio, and we need at least a 7 on the KP index to observe the Northern Lights overhead or at least above the horizon. A 9 on this scale would allow many southern states to view the Northern Lights. So there was no solar storm on the night in question, and both auroras, north and south, were both in a quiet state. So why was this even allowed to go past all these so-called experts? Well, the experts quickly swept this fact aside and stated that the storm itself may have created the aurora effect. I was floored by that comment, and I read it in more than one thing. Granted, it was probably copied and pasted. Fine. Although there is no known precedent for this ever happening anywhere in the history of the world, I'll concede this as fact and move on to save a little time here. According to the lightning strike data, there was a storm off the coast of Canberra that night, but there was not that many strikes inland. While this could debunk the story, we don't know exactly where this camera was set up, nor do we know what direction or how close the coast is to where this person was filming. The last issue with the aurora is after the flash and smoke ring, which is pretty cool by the way, the aurora suddenly fades away right at the end of the video. Now, auroras do fade in and out, but not suddenly, just shut off like a light switch. Now, the next set of issues lies with the lightning that is seen in the video. In the first 12 seconds, we see a number of flashes of lightning that are happening off camera, but illuminate the building at the right, as well as the rest of the scene. Now, the illumination happens as we would expect a lightning event would. The entire scene gets lit up from above with a slight angle. Off to the left is apparently where the lightning flashes are occurring. So my guess is the storm itself is off to the left, whatever direction, northeast, south, or west, that this is from where this person is set up. That would actually kind of tell me that the camera is actually facing south, which would be actually in line with seeing the aurora. But again, I don't have the facts. I'm just basing that on the lightning data and the storm data. So when the two flashes of the ball lightning happen, we would kind of expect to see the same effects as the lightning, except the ball lightning happens lower in the sky than where lightning happens. Lightning happens from above. It happens up in the sky in the clouds. This is happening apparently at a much lower level. Now, we don't know how far away this supposed ball lightning is. It's got to be fairly close compared to the mountains in the background, because when the ball lightning flashes, we don't really see any kind of light illuminating the background down there. So it's probably midway between the mountains that we see in the background and the viewer's camera. But that presents a whole other set of problems here. We would expect to see some sort of long shadows coming from the trees below. There's a series of trees that you can kind of observe. They got to be about 8 to 10 feet high, some a little long, some a little taller. But you'd expect to see really long shadows coming from these trees if this supposed light is coming from the sky at a low altitude here. And the other thing is the building off to the right. We would expect to see long shadows, and we would expect to see that the backside of the building would be darker than the other sides. But The building lights up just as it did with the lightning strikes that occurred, again, off to the left of where the camera was set up. Now, this could be a reflection from the building in which the person is filming that would illuminate the backside of this building. That's great, but that still does not excuse the trees from breaking the laws of physics. It appears that there has been some reflections added to the leading edge of the building, of some brightness and long shadows added to the roof of the building, but only in the second flash, the second brighter flash that is observed. And I got a little bit of a breakdown of those pictures that I'll post in the chat room here in a second. But nothing else seems to support this difference in light coming from the angled source. And again, with the ball lightning, there are two flashes. The first flash is quick, and the second flash lasts a little longer, but it's also a lot brighter. On the top of the building during the second flash, we see a long shadow, which we'd expect to see. But this shadow, again, does not appear at all during the first flash, which is just a little bit lower in intensity. These flashes do not create any lighting that we would expect to see. Now, one thing that I suggest, and I tried this, is to watch the video and block out the top portion with something opaque. On my desk here, I've got a bill with an envelope, and I held it up to the screen and blocked out the area where the ball lightning happens and adjusted the speed to a lower level, and I watched it at a quarter speed, and that's how I kind of broke down the flashes and everything else that we're seeing. And other things in the video, pixelations and things, and which is a whole other thing. The pixelations alone are enough to destroy this video as legitimate. But I slowed it down and blocked off the image of where the ball lightning happens. And if you watch the area, if you watch the building and the trees and just the landscaped area, as the lightning flashes, you'll see no real major difference in the way the ball lightning and the lightning affect the scene. It's virtually the same thing. Little bit of an angle difference, but not the dramatic angle from going from the left to directly in center of the scene. So watching the flashes of light, it all seemed to be the same. There was no major difference. And got a little link here that I put in on my website here, and going to post this guy here in the chat room, and you can check out. This is off of my website. I've taken three of these photographs, and I can actually put them in individually here, I guess. The first one that you see here is lightning. This is just a scene of the lightning lighting up the area in question. So you can see the building, you can see the grass, the trees, and if you look closely, you can kind of see a little bit of a shadow coming from – you'll see the shadows on the right-hand side of everything. That's because of the lightning seemingly appearing from the left or behind the camera viewer. And you'll get the flash one, which is, again, not as bright as the second flash. But you would expect to see a major difference in the way that everything is illuminated. But if you scroll, if you look back and forth, it's pretty much the same as a lightning flash. It's just a little – you'll see just a little bit brighter of an image, which can be easily done in digital editing software. And the second flash is much brighter. And you can see it's illuminated the area a lot better. But there's other things in there that are a little questionable that I really haven't had time to really disseminate, but I kind of thinking that they just basically copied parts of the video and just cut them in there. But this is not what you'd expect to see from a bright illuminated object happening out in front of you. And that's pretty much a quick breakdown of that video. Now, there's a lot of other things going on in the paranormal on news things, but most of these are not really paranormal. They're more or less just stuff for – it's just stranger stories or just strange stories in and of themselves. Now, there's one really cool one that I saw that was kind of thinking that it was going to gain a little bit more momentum than what it did, but it ultimately just kind of failed. And it's kind of cool when you see this. Whoops, posted it twice, but that's okay. It's an image of an ultrasound it's kind of gone viral, and it's supposedly of a demon. Yes, demon. It's kind of a somewhat viral story, not really viral, but it shows in the ultrasound image you see off to the right, you see an image of what looks like a demon, or what some people call a Hindu goddess. Well, I'll tell you what I see. I see pareidolia. What is pareidolia? Well, pareidolia is a type of apophenia, where the mind creates patterns in images and sounds that are merely random. An apophenia is a psychological phenomenon creating a significant event from a random one. So again, pareidolia is a type of apophenia where our mind creates patterns in images. Now, also sounds. So a lot of EVPs that we hear are nothing more than pareidolia. These are random sounds that join together, sound like words, even though they're not words. And the same with pareidolia, with visual things. We see clouds, and we might see an elephant. We might see a giraffe. We might see, I don't know, you might see something up there, a train. I don't know. But again, it's just a cloud. It's not really a train up in the sky. It's a cloud. So pareidolia, that's what I see in this image. And another term that is a synonym of pareidolia is called matrixing. And what else is there? There's also simulacrum. Simulacrum is in the context of apophenia. That's what the image or representation of the pareidolia. In other words, it's the item that's causing the misinterpretation. So the area where this Hindu goddess or demon is the light and shadows is the simulacrum. But the thought itself of what we're seeing here is actually pareidolia. So that's your little knowledge nugget of the week. And speaking of the week, we have the book of the week. And I try to pair up the book of the week with stories or popular things that are going on in the paranormal. And it's kind of a hard thing to do. There's only so many books and there's so many weird stories out there. But one story that popped up earlier this week in the news feed in the paranormal was about Hillary Clinton. And I don't like to talk politics here on the show, but she stated on the record, I'm using finger quotes, but you can't see me. She claims that she vows to investigate UFOs as well as Area 51. Well, anybody who's been around a while listening to politicians speak, you know that they'll pretty much tell you what you want to hear. And I think that's what we've gotten here. Although this story is kind of picking up steam, and I think that people will say whatever they can say to help induce votes. So that being said, the book of the week this week is about UFOs and about UFOs and presidents. And the book is called The Presidents and UFOs, A Secret History from FDR to Obama. Now, this book is about the secret history from presidents, but it's more or less just kind of a documentation of a lot of the popular UFO sightings and stories that have happened over the years. So it's a great book to read when you're thinking about history of UFOs and UFO sightings, but it also kind of coincides that with particular presidents at the time. Now, it really doesn't have much to do with covering up information, but again, it's a great book for talking about what's been going on as far as UFO sightings, and it relies heavily on the MJ-12 documents that are pretty much a big deal when you're talking about UFO sightings. And it's interesting that over the course of the last couple of years, if you've listened to the Paranormal News Insider, there's been a lot of talk about disclosure, namely from a lot of other governments, a lot of different governments from South America to Europe and even Asia have disclosed a number of UFO sighting documents. But here in the United States, totally different story. Totally different story. It's been very tight-lipped about everything. And those in the UFO arena are kind of freaked out by that. They really feel that the government is covering up stuff and there is some sort of conspiracy behind all of this. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But what I do know is that there's got to be a lot of documentation about UFOs out there somewhere. Now, whether they're legitimate or not, we don't know. But it'd still be great to be able to review these things. So The Presidents and UFOs, A Secret History from FDR to Obama, from Larry Holcomb, is a really good book. Again, it's one of those books that chronicles lots of UFO sightings. And I have a few of those books up on my desk up here. And it's gotten a lot of favorable reviews from a lot of other authors and a lot of researchers who have been involved in UFOs and the paranormal for a long time. So it is a great book. It's a great read. It's I can't remember when I got it last year. It's a pretty thick book, 352 pages. It took me quite a while to read. Granted, I was reading a lot of other things at the same time. But it is a very good read, and it's full of a lot of great information. If you're into ufology and you're into documenting UFO sightings, I highly recommend this book, and you'll get a lot of great information from it. And it's also available on Kindle if you don't really like the hard copy book. I'm old school. I like libraries. I like Frank Lee likes. He likes the smell of old books. I love the smell of old books. I like to read books, and it's just that's how I got my start in the paranormal, reading books in libraries. That's where I did my initial research. So, book of the week, again, The Presidents and UFOs, A Secret History from FDR to Obama, from Larry Holcomb, and it has a foreword by Stanton Friedman, who's also a guy I mentioned tonight during the Paranormal News Insiders, which is why I wanted to put this book up there. I was going to put one of his books up there tonight for the book of the week, but I can't find it. I think I let somebody borrow it. I hope not. I'll have to get a hold of that book and make sure it comes home. Yes, libraries are awesome. They're very awesome, and they're an endangered species, I think. But that being said, I said I was going to mention some of the conferences and conventions. And again, the first one of the year happened down in St. Augustine, Florida. It's still underway right now, January 4th through the 6th in St. Augustine, the International Cryptozoology Museum Conference. And you know, talk about some negative things about the show. And we were talking about this on paranormalforum.net. About getting feedback on your paranormal show or your podcast, whatever you want to call it. And one of the things I got feedback for, negative feedback, not from paranormalforum.net, but from an email and also a review, I think, on iTunes about the fluff that I add up to this show, talking about conferences and conventions, that anybody can look this stuff up and find it. But I challenge anyone out there to find a more complete list of paranormal conferences and conventions than what you will find on paranewsinsider.com. Not one to normally honk or toot my horn here, but this is a great list, and it's ever expanding. I just got an email today about another convention that I did not have on the list, and got that one added today. So it's an ever-growing list of stuff. I believe that was the East Coast Paracon. That's happening September 24th of this year in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So if you're in that area, there's one that you might not have known about. And if you don't know about these, then I'm giving you the information now. You can plan to go there. These things are great, and I highly recommend getting out to a conference or convention in your area sometime. And they're all over the place. The next one here on my list for ghost conferences is the Yuma Prison Paracon 2016, February 5th through the 7th in Yuma, Arizona. Yeah, Arizona. Now, if you live in Illinois, there's one every year, the American Hauntings Annual Dead of Winter Festival, February 6th in Decatur, Illinois. And that one actually has free admission, which is pretty rare. Usually they have a lot of the paracelebs, people from TV shows, no matter how long they've been off the air. People still will pay a lot of money for these people. And yeah, well, I'm not so much into the convention type. I like the conferences where great ideas and information are being exchanged. And hopefully I'll be expanding. This is a new year, and I'll hopefully be expanding the show a little bit in regards to these conferences and conventions. I'd like to bring a few of those guests that are going to be appearing on the show, and not doing a full interview, but maybe just a little snippet, let them talk about the conference or conventions that they're going to be at from that angle, and maybe what they're going to be talking about. In addition to that, I'd like to get anybody who puts on these events, if they're willing to come on here, they want to come on here and talk about their event, to kind of give them a little bit of free advertising. I'd love to do that. I love these types of things, and I also love to speak at these events. And was hoping to have an announcement for this show about an event happening in Ohio later this year, but didn't happen yet. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know what's going to happen. I do already have a couple that I'm going to be speaking at here, one in Pennsylvania and one in Ohio, later on this year in cryptozoology, and that's going to be in May. And I'm sure I'll be talking a lot more about those as the time gets closer. But if you want to check out the whole entire list of conferences, conventions, and other paranormal gatherings, either ghosts, UFOs, or cryptozoology, check it out at paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. Again, this list is not done yet. It's ever expanding. And I added a couple of them today, and hopefully we'll be adding a little bit more as we get into January a little bit more. People are still kind of finalizing details on a lot of their shows, so this is going to be expanding. And we'd like to do some other things with some of these conferences and conventions. I'm going to be at the 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure down in Farmington, Pennsylvania in May. I'm trying to think of something unique I can do with that. I might pre-record a show down there. I don't know. I'll do something. Granted, that happens over the weekend, and my show's on Tuesday. But I might do something. Might take some audio, might put together a little presentation to have here on the show. Do something unique here. And we'll see what happens. So keep an eye on this list. I'm going to be adding it any time I get any information about it. And, you know, this is just me putting these things on. We're not associated in any way with any event listed and cannot guarantee any information provided. And I provide you the best link that you can get. Sometimes I screw it up. I mean, I'm my own webmaster here. I'm in charge of the website. So sometimes I screw things up. And I do reserve the right to add or not add events to this listing. I don't like to put the Comic-Cons and the TV show movie-based scare con type stuff on here, as well as horror, gaming, and anime-based themes shows. But it seems like it's becoming the norm, and it seems like more paracelebs are being invited to these, and they're including the paranormal as part of them instead of the paranormal being a large thing in and of itself. So, conferences, conventions, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here as well as see it on the website, let me know. You can either email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or get a hold of me through the website at paranewsinsider.com and click on the about/contact tab at the top, as well as through social media. So if you have an event, there's no excuse. You can't get a hold of me. Come on. There's like 15 different ways I just described right there. So with that being said, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, and the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Hi, this is Frank Lee, host of the Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show. Here on the WCJV radio network. For well over a year, you've been faithful listeners as we've tried to bring you the best guests that the paranormal has to offer so we can all learn together. So we can provoke thought in the paranormal field. So we can educate you. So we can educate ourselves. So we can all work together to make the paranormal field better by expanding knowledge and sharing our findings, working with paranormal unity. 2014 was a great year when we kicked off. 2015 was excellent as the show grew, and we've seen so many new guests come into the field. But guess what? 2016 is going to be even bigger, even better, because we're expanding our research. We're doing more to bring better guests to you. We're bringing more knowledge to you. And what are your findings? We want to hear about them. We want you to join us in chat. We want you to call in. We want this to be a community effort. Let's all learn together. Let's do our research. Let's read. Let's look at the case studies. There is so much out there to learn and so many questions out there that we still have. Let's make 2016 the year we answer these questions. So be sure you tune in every Tuesday night, 8 Central, 9 Eastern. And let's learn together. Let's make 2016 the best year the paranormal has seen yet. Don't miss out right here on WCJV-DB.com. See you there Tuesday.